pitch to the Center Circle studio. Tim Van Horn goes studs up into the soccer world where no one is safe. The 18-yard box is wall-free. This is My Three Subs Podcast, a soccer odyssey with your manager, Tim Van Horn.
Off the heels of the best season that Memphis 901 FC has seen in its existence, I am Brody Scott, and Tim Van Horn is sitting down with the captain, oh my captain, the Leston Paul, to talk to the Trinidadian midfielder about his career and about the year it has been as the captain of a playoff Memphis 901 FC club next on My Three Subs.
We'll be back with today's kickoff from the Center Circle Studios. This is My Three Subs, a soccer odyssey.
The heart of Memphis has always been full of song. Every walk of life represented in the way Memphians know best. From the established to the current to the rising stars, hear their story and their music on the Memphis Reverb podcast on your favorite podcast provider. Just search Memphis Reverb.
Hey, it's Tim. Just reminding you, this podcast is now powered by Podcave, the complete toolkit for podcasters. Brody and I want all of our time going into making the podcast as entertaining and as interesting as possible for you. So that's why we ditched our old services, made the switch over to Podcave. This is the complete podcast management, combining all the tools we need to make the best shows we can, to make them available on all the platforms you use, and to always stay connected with you. Podcave provides unlimited audio storage, so all our episodes, new and the old ones, are always available whenever you want them. And our website, it's included and built into Podcave, so you always have a place to find us. It's that easy. Music and soundscapes we use on the show are professionally made and fully licensed by Podcave. We get email and text management tools to stay in touch with you, guest booking tools, episode planning tools. Podcave even includes customizable news feeds so that we can stay on top of the latest headlines with Podcave. It's all in one place, and it's all inclusive for just $49 a month. That's right, $49 a month. Podcave, the complete toolkit for podcasters. Save time and money with your first or next podcast. Don't be afraid. Give it a try. Use Podcave. That's podcave.com. That's P-O-D-C-A-V-E, podcave.com.
This is My Three Subs, a soccer odyssey. We're underway from the Center Circle Studios.
Leston, thanks for joining me today. It's good to see you. I never get to see you sit down, so I look forward to getting to know you a little bit better. How you doing?
I'm good.
And we sit right here on the heels at the end of the season playoffs. So this is the latest you've been in Memphis.
Yeah, it is. Nothing new, you know? Yeah. But it's been the latest.
Thanks for giving us a few minutes of time, because I know this is the time of the year where the players kind of go back in the offseason and then come back later on. But I just want to go back to the beginning, because we don't really have a chance to talk and get to know you, but when did you fall in love with the game? What's your soccer story from back in the day?
It's a crazy one. When I talk about it, a lot of people, they're shocked. I started playing organized structured soccer football at age of 12. So I played cricket before. I played lawn tennis before. I did a bit of track before. And then
you recruited as a goalkeeper to play soccer that coordination with
No. So that's why I say it's weird when I tell people the story, because a lot of people don't really believe it, So I started off playing organized at the age of 12 when a good friend of mine, he came and he was like, hey, let's go play with this team that he was playing with. We went to school together. So I known him like all my life. He was like, let's go play. So I was like, okay, got my boots and went out, started playing. And then I was like, yeah, I think I love this sport, And from 12 to the age of 14, I made my first national team, the U15 Trinidad and Tobago national team, at the age of 14. So it was a quick turnaround within the space of 2 years, And then from then it was like U15, U17.
How did it work integrating with that first national team? You're new to this, and you have guys that maybe have been playing since they were 6, 7, 8
yep.
years old. Were you able to, did you fit in right away?
Right away. I feel it was my calling. because I went straight in right away.
What position were you playing mostly? Were you going to be the next Dwight York?
I played with a center mid, but like with the U15 national team, I played a couple of times. I played out wide on the right, which was, you know, it was strange. But like the coach played me there a couple of times, and I went back in the middle. But like most of my life, I played in the center mid. So that was the first national team I made, the U15. Then at the age of 16, I qualified for first World Cup, Youth World Cup, U17 World Cup. That was 2007 in South Korea. I was the captain of the team then. Then at the age of 19, I qualified for the second World Cup, Youth World Cup in Egypt, 2009, U20 World Cup. And I was the captain again. So it was a short turnaround, I should say. Short turnaround.
Before soccer, which one was your favorite of cricket, lawn, track? And at what point did you have to make the decision that I've got to kind of put this to the side and focus on?
I would say cricket, because it was like exciting, you know. Track was tennis was a bit, you know.
And I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to ask you what position, because I have no idea what the positions are in cricket.
Okay. Yeah.
Were you the bowler?
No.
Okay.
I kind of love playing like outfield, to just run and dive and catch balls and whatnot, you know, just be active. So sometimes I play a bit like wicket keeper. So, you know, you're always into the game, you know, but
I did go to Lord's Cricket Ground in London when I visited. I saw a cricket match. Mm-hmm. I had no idea what was going on.
Okay. But a lot of people don't know about it.
But I love the athleticism.
Yeah.
And the fact that you don't have gloves. I mean, you've got to catch the ball.
Yep.
The reflexes are incredible. So you had to put all that to the side. And all of this just came as a whirlwind for you to make the national teams. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't the only thing as well, because you were getting recruited to play college.
Yeah.
As well, right?
Yeah.
Can you talk about that process? I know you went to South Florida.
Yep.
And they're famous for being able to spot international talent. When did coaches come calling for you?
After the first Youth World Cup. So that was around 2008, the U17 World Cup. I had a couple offers from Charleston, South Florida. I actually, one of the assistant coaches from South Florida, he was Trinidadian. So it was easier for them recruiting Trinidad players. So he had like a couple of players before me who played there who were from Trinidad also. Javed Mohammed, Kareem, then Johan C. Marshall was the next one who went on and played MLS. So it had a couple of players who were there. And then after myself, they had Dwayne Muckett also, who played here. He went to South Florida for a bit after me. So they were always recruiting Trinidad players.
Why do you think that is?
I feel a connection also, because they had a Trinidad coach and they had Caribbean players. They had a lot of Caribbean players, I should say, also. And they had some Jamaicans. I played with a couple of Jamaicans also who were there at the time. So I feel like Tampa, it's easier to recruit like Caribbean players because of the weather.
Yeah.
So that played a big part in me going there also. And I had a couple family members over there, like my aunt. I had a couple, my aunts, uncles, a couple cousins who were living in Tampa at the time. So it made it kind of like my home, you know.
Did you play against Memphis in Memphis before then?
No.
I don't want to hit you.
When I was there, we were in the Big East.
Okay.
So I think the year I left, they changed conference and went to the Atlantic, I think, or something like that. So it's different now. I played against like UConn, Syracuse, and these teams. Never in Memphis.
How was the college experience? Not with the coaching, but it seems like it's just such a short season, and it's not given as much priority as maybe, you know, college football or mm-hmm. college basketball. Were you able to get a lot out of that minutes wise there?
Yeah, well, I played a lot in college, to be fair. I played a lot. Short season, but even in the spring we had games in the spring and whatnot. during the space of time, I kind of like stepped back from the national team and just kind of like try to focus more, because at that time they had Olympic qualifiers.
Okay.
And I kind of turned it down to just like focus on school, because I didn't want to be back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, you know? So after the whole college experience, which took me 3 years, because I did summer school, I piled up my credits. My last semester, I took 19 credits in the fall, you know? So I was just trying to get it done as quickly as possible.
What was the major?
Geography.
Okay.
Yeah, geography. I'm from the countryside, so I love outside. I love outdoors. I love, you know, I just love being outdoors. So that was kind of my calling, to just go into something that I love doing.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
So what about professional aspirations? If you've been on the national teams, you've been to the Youth World Cups, mm-hmm. and then you're at a Big East college, and I know that there's physical play there, so I know that scouts are looking and they pull talent from the college ranks, particularly Big East is one of the hot spots. What were you eyeing at that point? Were you even considering pro at this point, or was college a means to get the degree?
No, I was considering pro. But I didn't trust a lot of people, you know, at that time. I didn't trust a lot of people. And when I look back now, I wouldn't say I went about it the wrong way, but I felt like if I had more exposure to the whole agency set up with agents and stuff, it might have been different, you know. I had a lot of agents reach out to me, and because I never dealt with stuff like that, I wasn't open to it. Yeah. So the people who I trusted were the people who I knew from before, like my assistant coaches on national teams, head coaches on national teams. And like, they were saying one thing to me, like, okay, I would get you here. I would, this team is interested in you, or that team is interested in you. And after I graduated, I just wanted to go back home for a while and just kind of like cool my head, because I said like I piled my degree in 3 years. So like it was just like a weight off my shoulder, you know. I just wanted to just relax and get away, go back home and just relax with my family and whatnot. So I took a couple months off from the game, went back home. Then I started playing with a semi-professional team back home. And then after that, I signed with a professional team back in Trinidad, and I started playing again. Stayed there for like 2.5 years.
Who was your first club?
Central FC.
Okay.
Central FC in the professional league. So after that,
played. You guys went on a massive run too.
Yeah. We did well. We won 2 Caribbean Cups. We played CONCACAF Champions League a couple of times against MLS teams, whatnot. Sporting Kansas, Vancouver, LA Galaxy, you know, so it was a good exposure for me.
Where were you playing on the pitch at that time?
Center mid.
Were you more attacking, or were they setting you back further?
I would say I was like box to box.
Okay.
But
is that how you were as a youth player?
No, too? As a youth player, I played box to box most of the time. Sometimes I played a 10. I feel like a couple of times I played the 6, but like progressing over the years in my career, starting to understand the game a little more every year, I said, okay, well, now I'm just going to drop back a little further and try to see and control the game. So that's where now I come in and I feel more comfortable. I don't mind playing the 8, 10, but I feel more comfortable playing the 6, where I can see everything and control the game, you know. My years were, I feel like over the years I've learned a lot from the game. I've seen a lot, even playing with some of the players that I've played with.
Who was your mentor in Trinidad and Tobago? Was Stern John the coach there?
Stern John was the coach.
He played primarily.
He was the coach at Central FC for a while. And the first time I met Stern, he came in that time as the assistant coach. And he was calling my name, right, Julian? And like, I don't really like people like calling me out, you know, because I'm more like a just chill, relaxed kind of guy, you know? And then
I'm still amazed that we're doing this interview right now. I'm so laid back. I don't know how much this means to the fans. Oh. Share just your story with us. So thank you for that. But so Stern's calling you.
He came to me after a practice and he was like, we had a practice game and he came to me and he was like, I'm going to keep calling you out because I know your potential. I know what you can get. I know you're a great player, but that's why I'm going to keep riding you. And then from that day, we were like best buddies, you know? I was like, okay, I understand. And like every time he's like, hey, listen, you need to do this. I know what you can do. You got to do it. I was like, okay. And like, you keep pushing, make me a better player, you know?
How does that feel when you have a coach? I mean, at first it's got to be annoying, but then when he quits, it's he cares.
Yep. And I always say, if someone is giving you advice and talking to you and telling you the right thing to do, they care about you.
Yeah.
Because my mom always told me, if someone says something to you, corrects you, they care about you. If they don't say anything, they don't care. So I had always had that in the back of my head. So when he said it to me, I was like, okay. I know. I understand. So yeah.
That was a great run with Central.
It was.
Crazy.
We won three league titles, two Caribbean Cups.
Didn't you bury a penalty for one of those?
Yeah, I scored the...
I want to see the... I've never seen you shoot very much. I'd love to see that.
That's the thing. In my career, I scored, maybe less than 20 goals. But at youth level, I was the penalty taker. So I was scoring penalties, even national team, youth national teams coming up, even with Central. Yeah. I was the penalty taker at that time. I scored a couple penalties. It had this one cup game, I can remember, a cup final we played. And we got two penalties in the match. The first one I scored, the second one I chipped the keeper and it came off the crossbar. We were leading 2-1. Chipped the keeper, came off the crossbar. The team went up and score 2-2. Went down to penalty kicks and I had to take a penalty again. I scored the one in penalty shootout, but we ended up losing the shootout. I think it was like 4-3 or something like that, you know? So I took a lot of penalties in my career. I took a lot of penalties.
Do you remember the ones you miss or the ones you make more?
I would say I remember the ones I miss because it wasn't much. Maybe if I took, 10 or 15 penalties throughout the space of time, I missed 3 max. So I had a good conversion rate.
Yeah.
I had a good conversion rate.
Did you hit the front? You at least hit the bar or the keeper saved it or? Went into another zip code.
No. keep a save. Chip hit the crossbar and maybe off the post.
Yeah.
So I hardly like go for power. Most of the time I'm like trying to place.
Sure.
That's why I don't shoot the ball, you know?
And during that time too, you were on the senior national team too. Last count I saw, 30 caps with the senior
team? Yeah, 30 caps.
I really don't want to talk about this, but I got to talk about this from a historical perspective. You know where I'm going. This is November the 10th. It's rolling tape. You know, let's go back 4 years and 1 month. I know you were out there for the full 90 minutes. We got to talk about the match when Trinidad and Tobago knocked the United States out of World Cup qualifying with that 2-1 win on the last day of qualifying. And I remember that day so vividly because my wife and I were on vacation. We went to a sports bar to watch that match. We had spent a ton on drinks and on food to watch this match. And then Alvin Jones was that even within the country's boundaries? Gets that from like out of nowhere and buries it over your future boss.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you guys win 2-1 and you play the entire 90 minutes.
Yeah.
Can we look at that game through your eyes for just a couple of minutes going into that match? I think you guys were already nominated from going to 2018 Russia, but knowing that the U.S. needed to get that result to go in, how much, if you're already eliminated, does that really weigh on you that you can be a spoiler, or is it, I just want to show well so that the manager sees, as we get ready for the next cycle, I want to be a part of that. How does that, what was it like for you going into that match?
I feel it was like one of those games where you go give your all. Before the US game, we played Mexico in Mexico, and we end up losing the game. We lose that game 3-1. We were leading 1-0, and then they came back, they equalized, and at the end they came and they scored 2. So it was like, okay, we got 2 games left against 2 of the top teams in CONCACAF. Let's go there and give it our all. So we lost that game. We came back to Trinidad and we were there in the hotel. And then
you got some rain that week, right?
Yeah. It had rain.
Who figured in the Caribbean?
and to touch on that, I was going along the same line. So we were in the hotel. And the coach came and he was showing us like some videos with Dempsey and I think Tim, a couple of the guys, Altidore, a couple of the guys were in the video. And they were complaining about the playing surface and the tracks because there were tracks around the stadium field. So they were complaining because they had to train there the day before the game. So when they went, it was flooded with water and whatnot, and they were talking about it, and who were making fun and whatnot. So it was like, okay. So it was like, okay, look at these guys. Privilege, they want to come, they want to see this, So we're going out there and lay it on them. It's like, okay, we're going to go give it our best shot. So that was added fuel to the fire. So we went out. And
how'd the match go for you? Were you one of the ones marking? I know a young Christian Pulisic got into that match.
Yeah, So the midfield three at that time was Michael Bradley, Darlington Nagbe, and Christian Pulisic. Yeah. So Kevon George, myself, we were the 2 sixes, and Kalim Highland, the captain, he was playing like further up the field. So he had to match. So we basically went in that game. It was like, okay, in the middle of the field, we're going to match up man for man. So Kevon George, who played with Charlotte Independence for the last couple of years, I think last year he retired, he was man-marking Pulisic. I had Nagbe. And the captain had Bradley. So he's like, okay, wherever they go over the field, wherever, we're going to follow them. So they started going wherever we started. So we started physical. So we started tackling, and they didn't like that.
How did the pitch play since it was wet?
It was a bit slow, but we were accustomed to the pitch.
That worked well for you guys if you're going to be physical.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. So we were custom.
And by the way, quick shout, we got to show some 901 love to former player Tristan Hodge because he was out there.
Yep.
I think left
Tristan
back.
Was left back. Yeah. Tristan was left back. So we went out, and that's the home pitch for Central FC. So I played there all for the past how much of a years, So we know what the pitch was like. So we know it's going to be heavy. No, it's going to be tiring. So we went out, started being physical, Alvin scored a brilliant goal. And when he scored the first goal, it was like, okay, they were rocked. So they were saying like, what's going on? Then a couple minutes after the second goal scored, which was an own goal. So we were up 2-0 going into the half. And like, okay, we got them now. So they don't know what to do. Second half, we came out same, just being physical. They end up coming and score 1. And I was there on the field. I was talking to Altidore at the time. And he was like, I was like, bro, you guys still going to go through regardless of the result? He was like, no, bro, right now Panama was leading. Because if Panama had tied or lost, USA would go through. Panama, he was like, no, Panama is leading. I was like, okay. I was like, okay. For me, he was like, okay, I don't know what else to tell you. You know, I want to win. I was like, okay. He was like, no, bro, we're out right now. Panama is leading. I was like, okay. So just we just continued. We continued and we won the game 2-1.
How long did the added time seem for you guys? At that point, you're thinking, okay, we got something to prove. Let's finish this.
Yeah. So it was 2-1 and they were getting a couple half chances. I was like, hey, we got to ride it out. You know, let's finish it off. I can't remember exactly the length of the added time, but you know when you're up and you're trying to hold a lead, it feels like forever. So thankfully, we finished the job. And then everyone was pissed, like, for the U.S. team. They just walked off the field. And to cap it off, the next day, the manager comes and he says, you know, they had butters of champagne left back in the locker room because they were going to celebrate, I guess. You know, they're going to celebrate. Okay, they make it to the World Cup, whatnot. And they just left everything in the locker room. And they left. So it was like, we just spoiled the party.
There you go.
But it was a good experience. Up to this day, I never really... like, for me, it's because of the respect I have for Tim, we never really like sat down and reminisce, you know, of the time. I know it was a touching time for him, and that was his last World Cup.
Goals were, I mean, one was extraordinary, another.
Of course. So it's really and truly it's something that he couldn't really do much, but you know, massive respect for Tim and the career he's had. You know, we never really sat down and joke about it, you know, but. It was a good experience. One of the few moments in my career that I hold so dearly, you know.
Most of us never get a chance to represent our country. Just generally speaking, when you first were able to do that and then when you first got called up to the senior team, you know, what's that like?
Like a dream come true. Growing up where I'm from, it's Miaro, Trinidad. It's countryside. So how they have it down is a lot of people from the countryside don't make the national team. That's just, you're at a disadvantage because of how far you are to where everything's at. And then every day you got to travel 1.5 hours, 2 hours to go to practice. That's money, added money out of your parents' pocket as a youth man, as a youth player growing up. You know, there's added expenses out of your parents' pocket to go to training. Then after that, if it's evening time, you're reaching home, it's late at night, then you have school the next day. So it's tough. It's a sacrifice, you know. I remember waking up 4:30 a.m. on mornings to get ready to go to training because then you have to factor traffic and all these different things that come into play, you know, to get there on time for 7 o'clock, for 7:30 practice, you know. So it was a sacrifice for me. But my parents, they stood behind me and it's like, okay, I'm going to support you 100%. And then first Youth World Cup, we qualify. And then I had a driver. So like the national team was paying for my transport now. So Jack Warner was in charge at the time, thankfully to him. You know, he'd done so much for Trinidad and Tobago and football. And he was like, okay, this guy is from so far. We need to get him a driver. So things got a little easier at that point in time, you know. So then it was easier. But it was a sacrifice from the start to get there.
Does that factor in your attitude on the pitch?
Of course. Because I always want to win, you know, I always want to win. And because I know how much I've sacrificed throughout my career to achieve certain goals, for me, it's not just a game. For me, I give 100% every minute, you know, even though I may not be 100%, I go on the field and still give 100%.
Yeah, I don't think there's a question about that. I think Memphis fans... Totally. Memphis, how did you get from Central FC to Memphis? Who recruited you here from Memphis 901 FC, and what made you agree to come?
I left Central FC in what? I think it was 2016. I went to El Salvador. I played a year over there. And then I came back I played in El Salvador 2017, 2018. I got back. I got married in August of 2018. And then I said, okay, I'm not going to go back to El Salvador for next year. I'm going to stay and play with Central FC for the half of the season. And then I would see what happens the following year, which was 2019. And I went back to Central FC, and the owner, Ben Sancho, he knew Andrew Bell.
Yes.
Who was the first GM at the time, whatnot.
From Charleston Battery.
Yep. So they had a relationship because Brent Sancho, he played national team, played in the World Cup. Yeah. He played in England also. So I don't know how he knew Andrew and whatnot, but like they knew each other. And then he came to me and he was like, there's a new team that's forming in Memphis, and they want to have a look. They're interested. They want to have a look. So the GM and the coach, they're going to fly in next week. I was like, okay. Right. So Andrew and Tim at the time, Walt Queen, the previous head coach, they came down. We had a game. They came to look at the game and spoke after the game. And it was like, hey, we're interested, whatever, blah, blah, blah. They send the contract, whatnot. I was like, okay, I have one request. I need my family to be with me, because my daughter at the time, she was 1 year old. It's like, I'm not going to leave my daughter. I need my daughter and my wife to be there. And it was like, hey, for us, family first. I was like, you got it.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, you got it.
Nobody ever hears stories like that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a great story.
Yeah, I was like, okay, I'm coming. I'll be there. And it was like, okay, thank you. We spoke. We hang out for a bit. And then they left the next day. And then that was it. That's how I came here. And this is my second home now.
Playing on a cricket. On a baseball field.
Yeah.
You know, fans have turned out, and you know, the first season was interesting because it was an expansion team, first mm-hmm. year ever. Looking at the statistics, I believe you got in maybe 17 or 18 mm-hmm. games. How was the transition? Because we sit here now, and I think a lot of fans and people around the league don't think that this team runs without you, that you are the engine. But in 2019, mm-hmm. we saw you maybe every other game, and even at that, not starting.
First year, roller coaster ride for me. Started maybe 9 games. Came on for the next 8 or how many. In and out, broke my finger, was out for a month, had a knee injury, out for a couple weeks. Then I went to the Gold Cup. So, because the Gold Cup was 2019 also. So I was gone for, I think, maybe a month, 5 weeks. So it was, then I had international duty in between and whatnot. So I was in and out the team. Firstly, and then I had international duty for a long period. Then some injuries that had me in and out also.
How was that for you and for your family? Brand new home, new city, you're moving around with the Gold Cup, you've mm-hmm. had injuries, you're not having really a set run of play
yep.
on the team you just signed with. How was that for you and for your family? That had to be a bit stressful, I would think.
It was. My wife held it down, you know. She deserves a lot of credit. She deserves a lot of credit just being there for me and our daughter. She understands the game. She understands it's going to be stressful. So she's always supportive, always there. And for me personally, I don't like to put any pressure on anyone. So like, I would keep everything inside. So it was stressful for me. If I be as honest as I can be, and I would be always, I would always be honest. It had a point in time that I was thinking, maybe I should leave Memphis.
So you were what, 28 or 29 at the time?
I was 29 at the time. Yeah. And I was saying, maybe I should leave. Maybe I should go somewhere else. Maybe I should do something else, you know, go somewhere else and play.
Because you knew you could play in this league.
Yeah. Because at the time it was like in and out of the team and a lot of different minor injuries, whatnot. So I wouldn't say you're not enjoying it as much, but like, It's stressful, you know?
Was it frustrating that the team was struggling so hard in the first year as well? Were you sitting there thinking, okay, no offense to any other players, mm-hmm. on the team, but I think I could have an impact and I could make a difference if I were out there?
Yeah, I would think that. But for me, I always respect the coach's decision.
Yeah.
Always, 100%. And if someone comes up to me and they say, hey, do you think you should be playing? I was like, the coach makes a decision. I'm not going to just put myself on the field. Whatever decision the coaches make, I respect it 100%. So me personally, I was like, what's next? What he should do? What he should do? And then the season went by. My wife would say, hey, you got to keep going, you know, encouraging. I was like, okay. Every day I go, I work. Put my head down, work. Be a better person, be a better player every day. Improve. And one day, you'll reap the rewards. Second season, it's like, okay, you're going to take up your option. You're going to come back. I was like, okay, no problem. So then I came in the second year, and then Tim was here playing, whatnot. And
how surreal was that? I know. I think the match was 4-2 against.
Yeah, Indy.
You know, they were a buzzsaw, but you know, to have Tim back there barking out orders.
Yeah,
how was that?
It was good. It was good. I should say it was good. Just being around a legend, you know, around him, seeing how passionate he is about the game, you know, how vocal he is also. So it was good having him around the team. I learned a lot from Tim, you know? So the second season came around and
it shut down on a Thursday because of the pandemic. As if it couldn't get any wilder.
Yep. Yeah. And the first game of the season, like maybe the week before the first game, I had a minor hamstring injury. So I was like, okay. The first game, I'm going to miss the first game, but I'm going to be on the bench.
Yeah.
You know, I'll be on the bench. We lost the first game. And then the next week now, pandemic hit. I was like, okay. So I, in my apartment, my family, because my wife and they came up just before the first game.
Okay.
So preseason, I would come up, do the preseason, and then they would come up after, you know. So they came up.
Can
so
we talk about the fight that almost happened in Orange Beach, or do we just let that pass?
You can let that pass.
Okay.
That has nothing to do with this. No. Okay.
Okay, so the pandemic.
The pandemic hit.
You know what? Let's just change topic. I will tell you during the pandemic that Tim Mulqueen had a chat with us, mm-hmm. and he made it a point to tell us while folks were maybe exercising in their home that you got out and you were running outdoors. You were training and you were preparing while others were preparing in their own special way, mm-hmm. that you could be seen pretty much running all around Memphis, and you were assuming basically that maybe next week we come back.
Yeah.
That you stayed match fit, you stayed match ready. And I thought that was very telling of your character,
yeah.
that he made it a point to tell me, hey, all the guys are doing what they're supposed to do. In fact, I saw Leston, you know, running in Midtown one day, you know, getting his run in. At what point did things turn around for you? Because there was a time, you know, I guess when the club came back, I know Mark Birch was the captain, mm-hmm. but it seemed like things were turning around for you on the pitch.
Yeah.
Quite a bit.
Yeah. So throughout the pandemic, I was exercising like every day. Every day I would go out, I would go for the run, come back, and then I would be in the apartment. Me, my wife, my daughter, we would all be exercising, you know, they would be there doing stuff. So, and to be fair, I was in top shape. I lost so much pounds just like every day exercising, you know, and I said, like, I don't want to gain any weight. You know, I don't mind losing 5 to 10 pounds because when the time is there, I should be ready. I don't want to be caught off guard, you know?
And human nature says not everybody's going to be ready.
Yep. So when we started training and whatnot, we started playing again, I was ready. So we started, and then I started playing more regularly. And then that was it there. That was the turning point after the pandemic. And Mark was out for a while. And then...
You got the armband.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it given what your track record was in 2019 with playing time, if you were to say, hey, I'll bet you $5, who's going to be the next captain? Mm-hmm. Lestin Paul would not have been the first name just from the outside.
Yep, of course.
But there you are.
Yeah.
As the captain.
Yeah.
And apparently it was well received in the dressing room. What is it about being captain? What makes a good captain in your eyes? Why do you think that you do a good job as a leader?
I would say just being able to get the job done. You know, I'm not the most vocal person, I should say, like off the field. I would meet with players individually and say, I think you should do this, you should do that. Because I don't like to call out players in front of people. You know, it's the same I have. I don't like people calling me out. Because as I was saying with Stern, you know, so I know some players may take it differently if you shout at them in front of the entire group. I was like, hey, you need to do this. So on the field, I would be the loudest guy because I'm backing instructions. I'm giving encouragement. When you do something good, I'll be the first one to say, hey, well done. You do something not so good, I'll be like, hey, you need to do this better. Come on, keep your head in the game, you know. So, but while doing that, I have to show what has to be done also. So for me personally, I put the pressure on myself to go out and deliver, go out and get the job done, and then encourage guys to do the same. So it's like I'm leading from the front, but I'm also pushing from the back.
Who puts the armband on you? Was it Tim Mulqueen, or did the players take a vote? How did that happen?
No, I feel it wasn't the players. I didn't think like the players had a part to say who would be the captain and whatnot. Would be the coach and together with Tim.
Yeah.
So Mulqueen together with Tim Howard, the both Tims. And then Tim came up to me and was like, hey, keep leading. You're a great leader. It's like, go and lead. And then the first game that I got the ban, Tim was in the stands. You know, he didn't play that game because he was banged up. And I was like, hey, Tim, you got to play this game. The day before, I was like, Tim, you got to play this game. He was like, LP, I can't. He was like, Les, he called me Elias. He called me Les. He was like, Les, I can't. My buddy, I can't. He was like, but go lead. You're a good leader. The guys listen to you. They look up to you. Go lead. I was like, okay, I would. And then that was it. From that day on, I was just like, even though I didn't have the armband for the whatever games when Mark was back and whatnot, it was like added pressure for me to keep doing. And it was like, since the first day I came in, I would always try to encourage guys and tell guys what, even though I'm not the captain, because in the past I've been the captain of all the teams I've played on. From the youth national team coming up to Central FC to this team, that team, I've been the captain. So I know what it takes to be a leader. And even though I'm not the captain, I would still be one of the leaders on the team. I would still be vocal on the field. I would still encourage guys off the field. I would still tell someone, hey, you need to do this, you need to do that, you need to do that. So it's just natural now. For me, it just comes natural.
We have just a few minutes left. I know that you're transitioning into your off-season mode, and appreciate you spending time with us. As you transitioned into captain, the club transitioned into a new head coach in Ben Pearman. Mm-hmm. He wrapped up the second season, and then in the offseason, he was named for season number three for 2021 as the head coach. And you were one of just a few of the remaining original 901 FC players.
Yep.
with Raul, and of course Ben is mm-hmm. original as an assistant coach. And can you talk about Ben? Just what should we know about Ben? Just
Ben is a fun guy. That what you should know. He's a fun guy. One of the greatest relationships I've had with a coach. I have with Ben. Full respect, full trust in him, and it's the same he has in me, as reflected in, he called me on the off season and was like, hey, I needed to be the captain. I needed to be my captain. I was like, he said, you can take some time and think about it. I was like, okay.
Can I tell you a secret? Brody and I sat down with him for lunch last year, and we had made the suggestion that you be named captain/assistant coach. We didn't know Devin Rensing was coming and Devin does a great job. But
of course.
It's like, if you really are looking for an assistant, you've got one out there in number 20. Okay, every time that we come out for media day for practice, things look up tempo. They look lively. It looks like the team had very good chemistry.
Yeah.
What we saw on Thursday, is that an accurate reflection of what was going on every day?
Yeah, for sure. The greatest 901 FC team that I've played on throughout the 3 years that I've been here, I should say this year, team. I felt like everyone bought in. Everyone was together. We had a great spirit going. I feel like everyone enjoyed everyone. So it was like fun. It was enjoyable. Everyone got along with everyone well. And
that 5-game road trips to start the season, did that help at all? Because you guys were stuck together on a bus?
Yeah, of course. I feel like throughout the season, we grew as a family. And my last speech that I had to the team, it was like, throughout the season, I've seen we grew as a family. After every practice, we would say team, we would say together, we would say family. And those three things stood out throughout the season. So
when did belief come into the team? Because the first two seasons, late in the match, if there was a winning position, there would be a draw or a draw.
Yep.
And it's like, oh God, here we go again. We're about to drop points. That didn't happen this year at all.
This year was total opposite. When we just made up our mind that we have to make the playoff.
We just decided we're going to kick some ass.
Yeah, we have to make the playoff. And most of the time I would be like, hey guys, no pressure, but we just have to win. And there were a point in the season from the midway period, the second half of the season, personally, I felt like we were invincible. It was like, we go a goal down. It's like, no pressure. We've been here before.
When Raul hit that bicycle kick, against Birmingham.
Yeah.
At a time, it's just like, wait a second. This is how it's supposed to be in Memphis. You're sticking it the other way around.
Yep,
it
was incredible. Yep. So you look back and you say, like, you see things like that happen, like the bicycle kick. You see we score goal from a goal down. We go on and win games. Multiple games we went down first early on and we came back. And it's like, okay, like, we can't lose games again. We're at a point where no one can beat us. And everyone believed. So, and big credit to Coach Ben and Coach Dev for dealing with the group, because it's tough. It's tough to manage 27 guys. It's tough because everyone's not going to be happy. But to motivate 27 guys and everyone come out each day and give 100% and be happy, and that's big credit to those guys.
The selection would be obvious if the team wasn't doing well, but if the team is on a roll, mm-hmm. and you've got 20 guys mm-hmm. that want to get into that roster, yep. that's got to make the practices a little better too.
Of course. And then it's more competitive because guys want to play. Yeah. You want to play. You want to be as a footballer, you want to play. You want to be in a winning team, you know? You want to be seen. So that's where the pressure comes in on the coaches, you know? Who do I select? Yeah, you win a game, but a guy came off the bench and he scored a goal. Or he came off the bench, he got an assist. Do I start him the next game? Yeah. You know? So, and everyone is like, okay, everyone is fighting for a starting spot. So big props to Coach Ben and Coach Dev.
All right, three more questions for you. And the off season is here. It's fresh. So short-term future, probably not a question that, you know, to even address at this point. You know,
short-term future.
You know that we want you back.
Yeah.
That's pretty obvious. One of the members of the Bluff City Mafia, Rob Krause, sent me a note when he heard that I was going to talk to you. Mm-hmm. And he wanted me to ask you on behalf of the Bluff City Mafia, has your family liked Memphis? Because and the reason he asked this, he sees you with your daughter out on the pitch after the match. Mm-hmm. And has Memphis been good for your family?
Yeah, of course. From day one, and as I said, when I signed to come here, the first thing like Tim Andrew said to me is family first. And that's one of the decisions that's for me, my family comes first and they have to be comfortable wherever I go. So being here for the past three seasons, it shows that they are comfortable and we are comfortable and families first, and they love Memphis.
And thank God they were here right before the pandemic.
Yep.
Right? Because
yep.
you might have been separated
for a while.
You know, if you have any decisions to make, remember, family was here.
Yeah.
Long term, as mm-hmm. a captain, and you've always been a captain, and you have so much experience, have you started getting your coaching badges? Are you looking
at
maybe in the future?
Yeah. I'm looking at it. I'm looking into it. Maybe next year. Hopefully next year I would look into it more. But I'm starting to look into getting my coaching badges.
And I don't ask that because I know you got plenty of tread left on the tires.
Yeah. Of course, but you have to plan. You have to plan ahead. Just me.
But that's just something that Brody's asked me, and mm-hmm. people ask. It's like, you think he'll be a coach someday? You think he'd stay a coach? Would he coach someone? It's like, I don't know, but I'll ask him.
Yeah.
And then I guess the final question, since you take a beating out on the pitch and you give out a beating because of your physical play. When you're addressing a referee, which do you find more effective in getting out of trouble? Is it the prayer position of the referee, or is it the hands behind the back? Which one gets you out of trouble?
The hands behind the back. I would say the hands behind the back, because when I put my hand up first, they would be like, okay. Some of them would be like, okay, put your hand down. I was like, no, put your hand down. I was like, okay, I'm going to put my hand respectfully. Yeah. So I have to put my hand behind my back, and then the behind the back gets me out of trouble.
And I know there's a rotation of the referees that you see more than once. It's like, Leston, I listen. Leston, you've been super generous with your time. I know you don't do a whole lot of media, so it's a privilege to get a chance to talk to you. Thank you for everything you've done for this club. You are a legend here. We appreciate all that you've done, the work, and representing the club. Yep. And it's just great to get to know you and just to hear a bit about your story, because I mean, it's a great story. Even with the dumping the U.S. national team out of the World Cup in 2018, it's a sore story, but it's a great story because I mean, it shocked the world that night, and you were part of that. But thank you so much.
You're
for
welcome.
Joining us. We hope to see you back in 2022, and all the best to your family and
thank
safe
you.
Travels and until we get to, I guess, until next time.
Yeah, for sure. Until next time.
More next on My Three Subs, a soccer odyssey.
I love talking soccer, but I also love talking about real estate too. And people ask me about both a lot. And one of the big questions I get in real estate is, how's the housing market? The housing market looks great. And really, it all comes down to, when is the time right for you? If you're ready to make your move, give me a call. Tim Van Horn at Krylike Realtors, 901-756-8900 is my office number. Brody, can I give him my cell number? Oh, I can? Okay. 901-262-5000. That's my cell phone. You can also go to my website, timvanhorn.com. I can help you with your move around the block, around the city, around the state, and even around the world, too. I have a network of relocation certified agents just ready to help you. They are dying for your business, and I can put you in touch with those. All it takes is pick up the phone, give me a call. 901-756-8900. That's my office number. You can call me at my cell, 901-262-5000. Or just go online. Check me out at timvanhorn.com. That's timvanhorn.com with Krylike Realtors.
This is My Three Subs, a soccer odyssey. And we have added time to the podcast.
Huge shout out to Leston Paul. I, for one, cannot wait to see what is next for him in his career. Hopefully, that will be in a Memphis 901 FC 2022 kit. That would be exciting for me, I think, for the fans and everybody involved. I'm also excited about what's in store for the show. We are showcasing the stars of that Memphis 901 FC club, so more is in store. That's all I'm going to say for now. For the latest on who's on the show and for the latest news from Memphis 901 FC and the USL, you can always follow us on our social media accounts. We're on Facebook and Twitter at My Three Subs Podcast. On Instagram, we are at My Three Subs Soccer Pod. You can also message us there. For Tim Van Horn, I am Brody Scott saying, well, what I said for a lot of games in that USL. Blow the whistle, ref. This thing is over.
There's the whistle. Thank you for listening. Check out more My Three Subs Podcast, a soccer odyssey.
This is a Brody Scott production.
That's you, Daddy.